Hello, everybody. This is John Marks, the editor of CopsAlive.com, and welcome to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. Cops Alive exists to help law enforcement professionals plan for happy, healthy, and successful lives, both on the job and beyond. And I'm very excited to introduce our guests to you today. I have with me Heidi Hansen and Michael Mejia. They connected with me through the National Police Wives Association when I did an interview just recently with Linda from that board of directors, and Heidi was on their board of directors as well. And Heidi reached out to me and said, hey, we're doing some different things. Can we talk? And I am very excited to introduce them. Michael is a police officer. Heidi works at a hospital. They're both full-time students and in their spare time, and parents. And in their spare time, they have created a family group for Michael's police department, and they are working on psychology degrees. I'll let them explain that, but more importantly, are working on writing a book or a workbook to help police families and police officers survive the job, and what a connection it was for us to make with them. So I want to welcome you, Michael and Heidi. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
It is my pleasure. Can you guys share with me a little bit about your backgrounds, first of all, so people will know where you're coming from, and then we'll talk about what you're doing.
Sure. I guess I'll start. So sorry. We have a loud house.
No problem.
Well, we live in Northern California, not too far from San Francisco. I currently work in a hospital, and I have worked in hospitals since 1999. I'm a full-time student looking to double major in biology and psychology and then go to medical school. Additionally to that, we have a 16-and-a-half-year-old boy and four dogs and two cats, so we have quite a house.
It's amazing.
If law enforcement and psychology doesn't work, maybe we'll go into the veterinary field.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, tell me about you, please.
I've been a sworn officer off and on since 1987. I currently work for the Twin Cities Police Authority, which is about 15 miles north of the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm working graveyard patrol so I can continue going to school. Mm-hmm. I'm currently trying to seek my psychology degree. Hopefully my doctorate. We'll see how that goes. And basically looking to provide ourselves an after career, if you will. A lot of the things that we've been involved with within our work on a day-to-day basis are leading us down this path, and we're taking full advantage of the availability of the need, if you will.
Excellent. Well, I commend you guys for what you're doing. I mean, just all the things that you've got juggling right now is quite a challenge, and it not only sounds to me like you're doing that very successfully, but you're really reaching beyond that and trying to help fellow police officers and police families, and I salute you for that.
Thank you.
Heidi, when I connected through National Police Wives, I felt a real kinship with all the people that I met through that organization. It really is an amazing group of people that really support the people that are out behind the badge. Can you talk a little bit about what your involvement has been and what you've learned?
Oh, absolutely. They are fantastic. I found NPWA actually doing a web search, just sort of looking around on the Internet for what kind of resources even existed for police families. At the time, I found them just as Michael was transitioning from one department to Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very stressful, the realization that we were going to have to go through a field training program again,
mm-hmm.
and what that would mean for our family. And the unknown of a new department, it was a great move for him. I'm still thrilled that he's with them. They're very family-oriented. But still, I felt like I was missing people who understood what I was talking about when I could say, oh, our day's off again, you know, court again at the last minute. You know, they called the night before, and we had to change everything. It was very hard for me that I have friends and family that love me, but when I would try to explain those circumstances, I would often get, well, can't he just call them and say he's busy?
Mm.
No.
No.
You can't call the court and say he's busy. That's not how it works. So I was really looking around to see what existed, and I stumbled across this group. And as I became more involved with them, I just really saw that this filled a huge need all across the world. We have members from Canada, England. At different points, we've had people from even other countries than that. It's been very interesting to see the similarities, the differences, but one of the main threads that always tied us together was a deep kinship with each other,
mm-hmm.
and the willingness to be available to another member at any time to offer love and support. And as I got involved and really began to see how useful and how necessary this group was, I began to see that not only did I get my own needs met, but I was able to offer something to other people, that I was able to take my own experiences and what had worked for me in our relationship to be able to say, here's something you could try. Here's a tool that I used. And if it works for you, fantastic. And as that went on, and as I learned and grew, Michael and I would talk about different seminars he had been to, like emotional survival for law enforcement and how important that was. Mm-hmm. And we would start talking about, gosh, if somebody could just say in the police academy, you know, this is what's going to happen. They tell you about how to fight with people. They tell you about what laws, you know, you need to watch out for. But they don't tell you about what's waiting for you at home and what could trip you up there. And especially for the families, they don't tell them either. Look, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be canceled days. There's going to be disappointments. You're going to need to learn how to be really flexible. And so I think a lot of the issues that police families have are just from basically not knowing what's coming and then what to do with what you have when you get it.
Wow. Michael, do you want to chime in on that a little bit?
In addition to that, my background in relation to this portion of my law enforcement career came kind of suddenly. I was involved in a traumatic incident in 2004, which kind of changed my direction on the way I look at our survivability as a not only a police officer but for our families as well, mm-hmm. and how an incident at work can actually translate into something positive for ourselves. Dr. Joel Fay, who is a police psychologist and an actual working police officer on a day-to-day basis for the Santa Rafael Police Department, our neighboring city, was provided to me as a post-trauma-based, basically a confidant and somebody that I could go to ensure that I was doing okay. My department that I was working for at the time provided me with Dr. Fay, and he really assisted me in understanding why we do what we do, what happens when things don't go exactly right in our business, and what we could do to make sure that we survive the outcome of that. As you well know, more officers are taken by their own hands than by other people's hands throughout the United States each year. That number was appalling to me. Learning about different things such as the stressors that we deal with and the familiarity, really, that I attended, as she mentioned, Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kevin Gilmartin from Arizona, former police officer who also achieved his degree and is now providing assistance to police officers throughout the United States, provided some insight regarding hypervigilance and why we act the way we do when we get home. Yeah. And that was absolutely amazing to me. I have a background in working with narcotics, crisis intervention team for the mentally ill, and all of these things to help other people, but what about helping ourselves? So after meeting Dr. Gilmartin, watching his DVD, California Post, was our Peace Officer Standards and Training, provided a training DVD for officers to have an understanding, and this is for in-service officer training. All of these things became available, and then they kind of disappeared for a while. Heidi, when her and I got together, Dr. Joel Fay and Dr. Ellen Kirschman, who wrote the book I Love a Cop, held a family-based meeting where they could discuss the sort of things that law enforcement officers deal with on a day-to-day basis. Though the Emotional Survival book was great, though the I Love a Cop book was great, they talked about some of the things you should expect, some of the things that most police officers deal with. Mm-hmm. What we found that was missing was the how do you do it, the workbook, if you will. And so what we're trying to do is concentrate our efforts. Our study is she's looking to become a medical doctor. I'm working my way through the ranks and earning my education. And then because of this background that is now engaging ourselves into a different type of our business, we are looking to become medical professionals that can assist public safety-based persons to help them and their families on a day-to-day basis.
Wow. Well, good job. I say congratulations for you, even,
you.
You know, embarking on that endeavor, especially with what you're both juggling. So, you know, thank you for even considering giving back to the profession, and I salute you for that. Maybe you guys can talk a little bit about the family group that you've already created at your department and how that came about and what's happening with that.
Okay. Well, it actually started because of I had a community psychology class and I needed to do a project.
Mm-hmm.
And so because Michael's department was in the middle of moving, I asked them if I could offer my services to them to do some community-based work with the department, and they were thrilled, which I was a little surprised about, actually. I wasn't sure if they were going to – you can never be sure with some police departments, especially with administration, what's going to work for them and what's not going to work for them.
Yep.
And so I offered, you know, can I help with some transition stuff? You know, change is difficult for people. Maybe we could do some more programs to help people do things together. And they were thrilled. So the first thing I said is, you know, maybe we can you know, try to have a family newsletter. They were thrilled. I said, maybe we can have a website, you know, where we can just communicate in a little bit more privacy than we do on Facebook. They were all for that. So that's what we've started doing, is just offering to have more, you know, community-based stuff together. And it's been really well received.
Is your group just for married couples? Is it for people that are dating or, you know, people that are thinking about entering into a relationship with a cop? Tell me more.
Well, because we are partners in that we are domestic partners and we live together,
mm-hmm.
we really wanted, and that this is something I really appreciate about Twin Cities, our definition of family is not necessarily as strict as what some people might subscribe to.
Okay.
So really, to us, it's anyone that the officer considers to be family is welcome.
Right. So it could be parents and siblings as well, then.
Yeah.
We come from a lot of different backgrounds. We are all in different stages, and unfortunately, some of us are in stages of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Some officers are brand new and learning to build families of their own. We didn't want to exclude anybody, and a lot of times fraternal organizations – such as police departments, come through and they have to meet a certain category or a certain type of person, or they have to be married to be, you know, officially brought into the group. And the thing is that society nowadays does not define relationships so black and white, if you will.
Okay.
So what we wanted to be able to do is have people that are involved with our agency truly understand that regardless of who they consider family, and it could be a parent, it could be somebody they have a relationship with, but somebody who's involved with really, for lack of a better term, the care and feeding of the police officer is the person that we want involved with our group. So we can, as a family, work towards their benefit. And that's what we're looking to do, to open lines of communication and to ensure that we have effective communication between the couple.
Wow. And so what you're doing then is it's kind of a support group, and it's kind of a talking about what's going on and maybe trying to anticipate some needs, especially with, you know, you're talking about writing a workbook. I think you're probably anticipating more than you're even just trying to deal with current needs.
Sure.
Absolutely. Like we, one of the things I got from MPWA is I asked some of the wives, you know, what do you wish your department would do for you?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they asked for was so simple. They asked, I wish the department would communicate with me. I'm so tired of my officer calling me and going, hey, babe, you know what, the deadline for healthcare signups is today, so what do you want?
And you laugh. I think that you've probably been there yourself.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I can appreciate from her standpoint that she's thinking, oh, my God, I can't make a decision like that right now. You know, I want to read all the stuff. Where's the pamphlets? What do you mean the deadline is today?
Right.
And so when I suggested to the captains, you know, could we get an email list together so we could even send out information like, hey, healthcare signups are Tuesday, you know, September 1st, so, you know that you need to make your decision.
Hmm.
They were like, oh, that's perfect. That's so easy. Of course we can do that.
Right.
And the wives and significant others, when we presented that at the Christmas party, I mean, their faces lit up. Because then that kind of communication issue causes really serious fights at home.
Yep.
And it takes a small intervention sometimes to make a really big impact.
And you have to understand, our department, and I give our chief, Phil Green, credit. He's the longest-standing chief in the state of California right now. And it's, as an example, our Christmas party, the entire family's invited to the Christmas party because he understands that in order for his officers to do the job that he needs for the communities that we serve, that somebody has to be home supporting them. And without that, on the other end, our officers aren't going to be able to function properly. And so they were ecstatic to hear that during a building transition that we are going through, which is extremely stressful, that we were basically saying, hey, we will handle the family part, give us the opportunity, and they love the fact that that was going to be occurring.
Wow, it's nice that somebody finally acknowledges that, you know, that the old saying, it takes an entire village to raise a family, well, it takes a family to support a police officer.
That's true.
And that, you know, a lot of officers are single. But there are many that are married and have relationships, and there's a huge not only support network behind them, but it also contributes to other stresses that may affect the job, and it's foolish to ignore that. And I commend you guys for trying to bring that into the forefront and really address it.
Thank you very much.
Tell me a little bit about the piece that you're writing.
Well, it actually came from our schoolwork. We were doing homework one night, and I turned to Michael and I said, wouldn't it be great if there was a workbook? You know, because I've known from other cops where we've been talking about, oh, you know, this book is really great, and that book's really great. You guys should read it. And they'll look at you and go, I don't have time to read a whole book like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, that's really a good point, that you're asking very busy, very tired people to sit down and read a book. It's probably not going to happen. But then I thought, what if you had a workbook with little even perforated tear-out pages, and you could either work through the workbook from start to finish if you wanted, or you could say, hey, you know what, we're having some issues surrounding finances right now. Let's go to the section on finances and do some of the exercises on finances and see if we can kind of work through our problem. So it really suits, people can decide how they'd like to use it. Start to finish, piece by piece, there's no right way, there's no wrong way.
Good idea. Yeah, I've certainly found in my endeavors that it is tough to reach a police officer and really talk to them about, you know, some of the hidden dangers that Michael mentioned of the mm-hmm. of the career, that, you know, it's not the bad guys that we're spending all of our time training for that are likely to kill us. So there are a lot of insidious things like even cancer mm-hmm. that seem to erode most police officers. I've been told that our life expectancy is only 66 years, and that's not necessarily just on suicide and other things. It's a lot of health issues
yeah.
that come from a long, drawn-out career filled with a lot of stress. And mm-hmm. it is tough to get our attention, and it's tough to get us to really focus on those things. But I certainly believe, and it sounds like you do too, the first step is just raising awareness, and then I agree with you, giving people some practical ways to really try to change and make a difference.
So with the County of Marin, they looked into not only the crisis intervention team concept to provide officers available to handle mental health related issues for our community, they've also created a peer support group.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of the group is officers that are trained specifically to handle critical based incidents, a traumatic incident that may happen, an officer involved shooting as an example. Officers are actually deployed out there that are specially trained, and they become an assistant to the officer and or that department. That was a great start to a program that I believe, and Heidi believes, needs to be expanded out to include families.
Mm-hmm.
As you well know, when a critical incident occurs, the officer may have to go through a lot of legal things that the family may not understand. They may be held in seclusion. They may be taken from their families a little bit. A lot of the questions that even officers sometimes cannot answer should be provided to the family rather than he'll contact you when he's done. And so what we want to be able to do, and unfortunately some of our officers over in the BART Police Department across the bay mm-hmm. have seen incidents like this occur where something happens, community starts to change, the media comes around, who is going to support the family who's sitting at home and the children to provide some sense of understanding as to what's occurring in this? So as we see incidents like this occurring, the higher suicide rate throughout the United States, actually workers' compensation rates going up, officers being disgruntled at work, the higher divorce rate, you know, for this type of profession, all of those things I, and as well as Heidi, consider unacceptable are things that we're trying to work to at least minimize.
Hmm. Wow. Well, you know, we couldn't agree more. In my opinion, one of the reasons I founded Cops Alive is that we need to dig deeper, and I think we, as law enforcement professionals, law enforcement families, everybody connected with law enforcement, we need to take the leadership role in making these changes because I don't think anyone else will. And I'm really pleased with what you guys are doing, and I say more power to you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. You know, I know other groups are on their way. I just attended a conference in San Francisco through the California Narcotics Officers Association of California, mm-hmm. and they had a personal survival for law enforcement class that was there. And what was nice about it is they broke down a lot of the areas of concern that a police officer's family may have to deal with, financial, their marriage background, and so forth. And, you know, we're looking to have as many officers, as many departments really become involved in the wellness of their agency. And when everybody has a buy-in in the way they do their job, maybe they could have a buy-in in doing this, whether it's a fitness program, whether it's a mental health program. You know, we all have the employee emergency program where we can make a phone call and talk to a counselor.
Right.
Why not have that internal dialogue as well? And so we're looking to make sure that police departments, because we are different than officers were 20, 25 years ago when, you know, people didn't talk about this sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
and we saw the result of that, and that wasn't something that was acceptable, that nowadays we realize that we're human beings just like everybody else, and we need some help too sometimes.
Yeah, I think the first step is you've just got to start talking about it, like you've said, and then, you know, it opens up all kinds of doors. And even at Cops Alive, we talk about 10 different areas of influence that have to do with health and recreation and finance and relationships. And it is such a broad thing that I think it's probably the future of law enforcement survival. But we have a long way to go because we spend right now a lot of time and money and energy on a lot of other things that are equally important.
True.
But we have done that at the sacrifice of the human side sometimes. And I think we're learning that by doing that, we've created more wreck and ruin than maybe a lot of the bad guys have. So,
well,
you know,
true.
I think
really,
we can't
do
anything.
The quality of officers that's produced for the public to have to contend with on a day-to-day basis, we want officers that are out there that are rested. We want officers that are out there that are minimally stressed and that can actually do the job that we've signed up for the betterment of our communities in whole. And the only way to do that is by producing a police officer who's very well-rounded and is mentally and physically fit and has the ability to take what he's learned and maybe pass it on to somebody else out in the field. Because you know what, this is basically a universal no-brainer mm-hmm. that everybody should take care of themselves first. And, you know, we see the end results of it with our suspects and our victims out there. We're becoming victimized by it as well.
Right.
That's definitely something that I try to make the point to some of our more resistant officers is you take your home protection very seriously, right? And they say, of course, you know, you don't want anyone to find your wife and your kids, right? Never. I would never want anyone to hurt my family.
Right.
If you don't take care of these things, you are the one in the end that ends up hurting your family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a terrible thing to have to realize at the end of the day, that for all the things you did to protect your family, you kind of opened the back door and escorted those troubles right through the door.
Yep. Well, most notably just recently, I think we've had two that I'm aware of, murder-suicides in
right.
law enforcement families, and
yeah.
that's the worst-case scenario. But there are so many other examples of, you know, drug abuse and excessive drinking and domestic violence and so many other things that we bring home mm-hmm. and then scoff that off and blame it on the job. But It may be the job, but it's also the way we're handling the job, the way we're coping with the job, and frequently the way we're not coping with the job.
Well, you know, like I said, our workbook is to provide a tool. It's not a catch-all. It doesn't cover everything. But what it tries to do is offer something. And then hopefully other people who have other ideas can add to that. You know, we've already started with books that identify the fact that cops aren't bulletproof. You know, that's what it comes down to, is that, you know, we are as susceptible, if not more susceptible, to stressors and depression and things of that nature. I mean, we handle everybody else's problems on a day-to-day basis. Who handles ours?
Yeah. Yeah, frequently no one handles ours, and then we bring our baggage home and dump it on our family.
Well, of course, we don't go to doctors. We don't go to therapy. We don't do a lot of those things that, because our job, you know, we're supposed to be strong and we're supposed to handle things and, you know, we take care of it. Who provided us with the tools to be able to do that?
Yeah. Well, and frustratingly, I know that I've been a strong advocate on NPWA to get a lot of families into counseling. I've always been a very big proponent that you want to make sure your toolbox has as many different tools in it as possible so that you know that you have the ability to fix whatever comes your way. And I will never forget one couple went to therapy, and you know, we were all anxiously awaiting to hear how the first appointment went. And the woman came back and said, "Well, that will be the first and the last." And I remember typing her a message saying, "Why? What happened?" They went to a therapist that was recommended through their health insurance, and the first thing the therapist did was look at the police officer's schedule and tell him, "Well, absolutely, you're going to have to change your schedule, because if you really care about your family, you're not going to be able to work like this."
Wow.
So she alienated him in the first 5 minutes of the appointment and made unreasonable demands that he wasn't going to be able to meet. What is he supposed to do? Go tell his sergeant that his therapist says that his schedule needs to change?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not possible. And so I was very frustrated by that. And so I can understand that many officers have a not necessarily misguided trust of therapy and counseling. So one of the things we're trying to do is open up different ways of looking at that kind of structure and ways that might be more comfortable.
Well, and certainly in my experience, one of the ways is usually cops and their families prefer to talk to people that understand and know and have been there, and that's why your concept of the family support group is so important, because it takes away that initial threshold, and there's some trust that's in place before anything starts. And the more mental health professionals and more people we can get involved in that, probably the better.
Very true. You know, and it's hard because, you know, a lot of the people that have come before us, they maybe have talked to police officers. They've done their interviews. They've written a book. They've done all of these things that, you know, are reporting what occurs within the police family. But until you actually live it and you have that true understanding of what those stressors are like and how the dynamic is truly unique, you don't know until you've lived it, really.
Right.
And what we're trying to be able to do is, you know, I've come from a failed marriage, which is unfortunate, but I guarantee you my next one won't be. And the reason being is because I am taking the steps to do what I can to ensure that I've got all the tools on my belt. And the best thing I could do is provide it for the next generation of officers that are coming through. You know, some of the old guys, you know, they learn, you know, usually by mistake. They're on their second, third, fourth marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shouldn't have to be that way. You know, we put a lot out there every single day. There's not a lot to ask for when it's just to have one good marriage and quality time with our kids.
Yeah.
That should be a given.
The thing I've noticed also is when you have several components, one, an officer that's been on the job for a while, perhaps multiple failed marriages, that also has a domino effect onto their finances, which you mentioned earlier, and, you know, divorce issue becomes a component, and then there may be, you know, alcohol involved or some sort of self-medication.
Right.
And it's either a house of cards or a set of dominoes that are just waiting to tip over.
Very
right.
True. And, you know, departments would probably save a lot of costs on disability-related payments. You know, have a better officer that's out there producing more for you. And, you know, really just having a wellness check and understanding where your officers are at, I believe, is a department's responsibility and necessity in order to do the job the right way. Any business that's out there doing their job has to look at every aspect of the business. You mm-hmm. just can't go through your frontline people and replace them with somebody else with the same problems that's banging your head against the wall.
Right.
But being able to identify that there are some needs out there that need to be met, and that, you know, a lot of these things come at really little or no cost, that's something that should be activated within an agency, because that's what the agency or the employee of the agency needs to have happen. They need to know that no matter what happens, that not only their agency is there, but the family has a true understanding of what's going on. And we hope that as generations come, that they maybe attend classes like this within the police academy, or maybe that there is in-service-based training, kind of like what Dr. Go Martin had produced for us, that really kind of enlightens us again and says, oh, yeah, forgot about that. I need to kind of work on that. I need to put a calendar up on the fridge and actually plan a date night.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's once a month, once a week, whatever the case might be, you plan your court dates, you plan your training dates, why not plan your family dates?
Yeah, I so agree. I know there are probably police chiefs out there listening, thinking, you know, how am I going to squeeze this into all the other things that I have to do? And yet, you know, I believe that we in law enforcement have to take the leadership role, and sometimes the leadership role falls on the leaders, but not necessarily always.
Well,
and
I
absolutely
right now,
agree
like
with you.
I have
it's cost effective
in the state, and I'm not just saying that. He's due to retire this next year.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I know he's been through a lot as well, but the fact that he empowers his people, that's less for him to do, to take something like this, look into it, really, you know, provide this availability to people, and it's simple. It hasn't cost us anything yet, our time.
Yeah.
And what it does is that it makes us want to do even more, and then as more people hear about it, they want to become involved, and pretty soon it kind of runs on its own, which is kind of nice. You know, it doesn't cost any money. It's not a line item on the budget, but it's something that its returns are going to be great for the agency. Because to be honest with you, the officers that are happy are the ones that come up to their job. They show up for work, and they don't go out on workers' comp.
Right.
So that is a benefit in itself that I'm sure a lot of cities would like to have.
Happy officers have less injuries, less sick days, less citizen complaints.
Yeah.
It's just a fact that you have a regular human being doing this job. They're not machines. You can't program them to be perfect. And so if they come to work already burdened with stress, as Michael likes to talk about, if their backpacks are already full by the time they come to work,
mm-hmm.
something's going to break them down. One more pebble in that already full backpack is going to be the final break.
Well,
and
Heidi, I'm kind of wondering.
At the end of the day, that is a line item.
Yeah.
And I learned that from our neighboring police psychologist, is that my traumatic event didn't have to be a single incident that occurred. You know, our chiefs of police do a great job when it comes to officer-involved shooting protocol.
Right.
You know, something happens, they come up with the plan, they instigate the plan, this goes, and everybody gets involved with it, and it's taken care of, and there's certain measures that they have to meet. They go through the checklist box, and everything is done. Everybody's fine. Well, you know what? When you are throwing a little bit in that backpack and a little bit more in that backpack, and then you add a little bit of sand in the backpack and another rock and then maybe a little bit bigger of a boulder, the weight is still the same at the end of the day.
Hmm.
And what happens is the straps will break, and then your officer will go down. And unfortunately, that's usually an end result when it comes to the cancers, the stress, and unfortunately the officer suicides that we see throughout the country today.
You know, the one thing that strikes me is that both of you have jobs, full-time jobs. Both of you are studying in school full-time. You both have the same household with family obligations. Heidi, it sounds to me like you're kind of being asked by the nature of Michael's work to go the extra mile, because the burden is kind of on you to get involved with these things and know more and help out and just... Out of curiosity, how do you feel about that? I mean,
well, I chose this life. I knew what I was getting into. Michael was a police officer when I met him, so
mm-hmm.
it wasn't something that changed suddenly in our relationship. Being in medicine, it's not that different. There are times where Michael has to support me particularly when I worked in the emergency department.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a 24, it is a 24/7 job. It's not an 8-to-5.
Right.
And so there was lots of times I'd have to call him 15 minutes before I was supposed to be home and say, look, not going to happen. I don't mind because I feel that this is a huge opportunity for me to learn and grow with him. And I feel like that's a huge aspect in any relationship. It's not that you stop growing when you're in a relationship. The trick is to grow kind of in the same direction, if at all possible.
Yeah.
He's equally supportive of me, so I don't feel like I'm giving something that I don't get equally in return. Last semester, I had to commute really far for a anatomy class, and so it was on his days off, and Michael drove me to every class so that I could study in the car and waited for me for the 2.5 hours that my class took and drove me home so I wouldn't be so tired.
Wow.
It's hard not to want to do anything you can to support somebody who supports you like that.
Yeah. Nice job, Michael. Good work.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Like I said, the marriage I had before, and again, not to speak ill of anybody, but when there was no buy-in into what I did, I felt that I was less worthy in that relationship. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of officers go through that where their wives, unfortunately soon to be ex-wives a lot of times, get to the point where the kids and them will do this, you do that, we don't want to know about what goes on in your world, and then they alienate the officers as well. So maybe the officer decides, okay, well, you know what, I have enough stress at home, I'm going to go to work, and that's my safe haven. And then all of a sudden your safe haven fails you because something happens at work.
Right.
An IA occurs, you get a write-up because, you know, you're stressed, you're tired, you got a lot of things going on at home. You do something that maybe you shouldn't have done, or something occurs where the department has to do business. And then at that point you realize, God, I don't even have this anymore. And then so your identity as a police officer at that point starts to come in question. And then what do you have left? It's different than any other job. You know, again, more like a vocation where this is what you've become. Maybe isn't a healthy way to be in the long run, you know, because, you know, now I learned to say I work as a police officer. Even though I am a police officer in my heart and soul, if that were to ever be taken away from me, because those things are not within our control,
right,
that could be extremely damaging to most people. They lose that. They lose that identity. They lose their purpose, and that's very, very scary for some. But when you learn to have that balance, when you learn to take care of yourself, when you learn to do those things you used to do, all of those things are important to keep your self-identity, which should be kept separate from everything else. When your family loses you because you become too much part of the job and you don't do the things you used to do and you don't show up for the family events and because, you know, they're not cops and they don't understand or, you know, you're too tired or whatever the case may be, those all become stressors that everybody has to manage. And you're asking a lot from your spouses and from your children, and everybody is affected. So the best thing that we could do in our particular relationship is understand that there are stressors, understand there are responsibilities, and, you know, there are times where I got to suck it up a little bit. I got to nap in the car while she's in class all day, or she's got to stay up and be able to provide something for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what a reciprocating relationship is. That is something that defines a relationship. You know, love is not limited by convenience. It's the inconvenient times that lets you know that you're truly loved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we try to strive for in what we want to create in our workbook.
I think you've been giving it, but I'm kind of wondering what advice you would offer a young couple that haven't become married yet and one of them is about to start a law enforcement career. What kind of advice would you offer them?
We do get asked this a lot. You know, one of the things that's very common on NPWA, and we kind of have to trade off on who's going to take the question, is somebody new will show up and go, oh, my God, nobody ever said this was going to happen. I mean, I haven't seen him for 10 days. And it is a shock. This isn't really what you sign up for generally when you get into a marriage. You don't think, you know, I really love this guy. I hope I never see him. That's not exactly the way it works. So you have to, but what you need to focus on is what does work. So you can decide to have your relationship defined by what isn't working, or you can look for what is working and accentuate that. We're very lucky that we live in a time of technology. There's really no excuse to go days and hours without any communication with each other. Even something small from the officer to the wife at home, hey, busy night at work, love you, on a text, means a lot. Those are some things you can do. I know that when Michael is going to be gone for a while, it means a lot to me to be able to pack his lunch. It's not that big of a deal, but I really like to pack him a lunch, and I like to tuck a note in there that he's going to find later, just a post-it note, that says, hey, somebody loves you, with a heart on it. I try to tell people that it's not about big events. It's about sprinkling little events over everything you can. When you can, wherever you can, all the times that you can, do something. And if you do, generally you're going to be successful. But Michael's right. It does have to have some reciprocity. If you're the only person writing notes, packing lunches, and I'm not saying that it has to be tit for tat. I wrote you a note, you write me a note. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. I do the things that I'm good at. I try to celebrate those parts of myself that make me happy. Michael does a lot of things that he's good at. We're different. We complement each other. We work well as a team. I think if a new couple is coming together in their relationship, approaching this kind of lifestyle with a really strong sense of teamwork is the way to make it happen. You have to look at your life together with a certain sense of enthusiasm and go, okay, well, this looks pretty tough. How are we going to make it really work for us?
You know, and to add to that, you know, it's there's a side of what we do that is very, I guess, you know, type A, if you want to call it that. We're individualists. We're not like the fire department where we have a team mentality. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, if it's a team-based event, it's competitive. That's just the way cops are made. You know, we're out there to handle things on our own. The police officers, male or female, have to realize that, one, full disclosure as far as what we do and what the responsibilities we carry needs to be given to the newly involved person in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Two, effective communication. That means listening as well as speaking and making sure that the other person truly understands the message that you're sending out. And as for the officers that are tired and coming home, you know, you have to come up with a plan that, hey, I don't want to get bombarded when I'm coming in the door, then make a plan that after 15 minutes that I'm all yours. Whatever it's going to take to make sure that both parties are fully communicating to what their needs are. When you stop communicating, a lot of these problems happen because, as you know with the job, when you don't have enough information, you fill in the blanks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to be able to do is fill those things with positive imagery, such as things like the notes, a picture in your locker, and something for the family to be able to have when you're away from home, and even something as simple as taking the time for a text message or an email or a phone call, things of that nature. We have the technology. There's no reason why we shouldn't be able to do that. And if it gets busy, having somebody on the other end of the line really understanding that if they're not calling, it is too busy right now, and they will call when they get the opportunity. And setting up things ahead of time so that way both parties understand that this is the way our lifestyle is going to be managed. And, you know, we do it for our work every day. We have a certain way we do things. Why not have that set up at home to alleviate a lot of the stressors that most law enforcement officers have to deal with? And this is the same in California or New York or Florida or Detroit. No matter where you're at, we all deal with very, very similar problems in our homes. There's got to be a similar solution to it, and that's what we're looking for.
I used to tell people that wanted to learn more about law enforcement that they should spend a good deal of time riding along with patrol officers to figure out what the job is really all about, because it's not like it is on TV.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. We have another member that was trying to seek some understanding about her husband's employment. And so we offered to have her ride along with me, and we took her out on a night. And I work for a very small city compared to his very large city in my area.
Mm-hmm.
And that night I was hopping busy. I had helicopters flying over my head. I had my M4 wrapped around my neck. I was waiting for a gunman to come running up over the hill, and she's sitting in my passenger seat going, no wonder why my husband can't call me at times.
Oh my God.
You know, that reality is exactly what it is that wake-up call to say, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. You must get really, really busy. And sometimes that's needed to really have that involvement, that buy-in to what the other person's doing, and that goes both ways. That means that when you come home and you're tired, that you say, hey, I'll handle the garbage, I'll handle the bed making, I'll handle whatever needs to be done. Sorry, guys, you know, we have to do our job too. And it does go both ways because both people are as important to the relationship as the individual officer is.
Well, and what I'm hearing you say too is that maybe they ought to spend some time with the family support group or the family group, both of them, you know, hearing the other side of it is, you know, what it's like to be waiting at home and wondering what it's like to have to support somebody with that kind of an erratic job that brings all their stress home. And it almost sounds like we kind of need a family ride along as well so that everybody has an understanding what's going to happen.
I'm a huge proponent of that. I ride along. We're lucky. Every department has different policies. I'm very lucky that Michael's department does let me ride along pretty much whenever I want. You can ride for as little as or as long as you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important to do that because I know that when I ride with Michael, he works a 12-hour shift, 6 at night until 6 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
In a 12-hour span of time, I watch him try to start writing a different report probably 6 or 7 times and get interrupted and interrupted and interrupted. I see how hard it is for him to get something to eat. I see how many times he has to multitask. And so I do recall those times when I'm calling him and it's, you know, 9:30 at night and I look at my watch and think, wow, you know, I would think he should be able to answer the phone right now. And then I think back to all the times he's getting interrupted and all the calls he answers and I think, well, he's probably busy. And I know that. He's working. He's busy. And so I'm able to accept that I might not be able to talk to him on demand and he'll call me when he can. And being able to ride along and see that for myself is very important. I think even if you can't ride with your particular partner, if you can ride with another shift member, if you can, you know, do any way of observing, it's really a great idea. For me, I actually am a proponent of spending the whole shift because I think that when you get a perspective of seeing the entirety of how his shift works, you really get a better perspective of why he is so tired and unavailable for those first 15, you know, 20, 30 minutes when he walks through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And having the understanding gives you the ability to be a better communicator and a better partner.
Well, I commend both of you for all that you're doing. I mean, Lord knows the profession needs leadership now. And I think we are entering into a new era in law enforcement. And we are starting to look after each other and take care of each other. We've said it for years, but I think we're finally getting to a place where we're actually taking care of our own. And, you know, I always tell people that are listening, you may not be the one that's having the problems right now, but there's a good chance that you will. But it might be a good time for you to lend a helping hand to somebody else that is struggling and you can see it. And maybe, you know, pointing out resources or offering suggestions is the way to kind of give back to your profession, give back to your team, give back to your peers, and kind of help keep the giant family together.
True. And, you know, and we, as individual officers and the people that are listening to your broadcast, we have all seen officers that have lost this battle. It doesn't have to end up in suicide. It could end up in divorce. It could end up in stress. It could end up in loss of productivity. We see when they come in, they're happy. We see when they're not so happy. We know that in any day of the week, if necessary, we would stand in front of a gun for them and be able to take that bullet for them. Why not provide a listening ear? Why not take the time to really be available to the other officers to, you know, have that sounding board available and, you know, really kind of drop the macho side, if you will, and be able to say, hey, look, you know, we're all family. I'm your brother here or your sister here. What do you need from me? I'm happy to do whatever you need to do, whether it's, hey, take a little nap to reset, or let me give you a ride home, or I'd be happy to be available to you, or, you know, take a day for you if you need it. We all need a time to hit that reset button. And the people that we have to look toward are the people that we work with. And a lot of times those are our team members that really know us best. You know, and the one thing that we can ask for, kind of pay it forward. The officers that are doing okay have been through their issues. If they haven't, they soon will be. That's just the nature of the job and the nature of the family dynamic. but you really send it out to another officer. Teach the young ones how they need to live their lives. Be open and truthful. Say, you know what? I screwed up. I messed up my first marriage. Here's what the deal was. Here's what I own in this. Don't let that happen to you. Take care of your business to make sure that you are going to go home not only at the end of the night, but at the end of your life. Because when you hit that retirement age, you want to have some time left over for your family that really was there for you and watched your back every day when you came home. Because it would really be a disservice if you didn't.
I always think that I love that saying, a high tide raises all boats. And so what I'm looking to do is raise the tide for everybody so that we can all achieve a little more. I think that our law enforcement community does an outstanding job. They should be rewarded with a happy personal life to complement their, you know, extremely well-done professional lives. And I think it's possible. I don't think it's acceptable to just shrug our shoulders and go, well, that's the job. I'm not willing to accept that. I'm not saying that we are going to have lives that match everybody else's. You're right, this is not an 8-to-5 job, but we can make the times that we do spend better, and that's worth striving for.
I love your attitudes. I'm wondering if you guys can guide people to some resources that you've found helpful. You've mentioned a number of books, Michael, and I want to make sure you guys give your contact information and let people know how they can get involved with what you're doing. But what resources would you recommend?
Well, most definitely. I mean, one of the books that helped me out quite a bit, and I just introduced Heidi to Dr. Kevin Gilmartin over at the CNOA conference in San Francisco. He was one of the first people that really turned my mind toward understanding who I was and how this profession affected me. His book is available through ES Press out of Tucson, Arizona, and it's called Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement, and it's Dr. Kevin Gilmartin, one word, and he was tremendous in helping us out. He covers the behavioral side of why we do what we do, and having a better understanding of that really assisted me in understanding the day-to-day trials that we go through and kind of how to reset ourselves a little bit. Another book that we look at is the I Love a Cop book by Dr. Ellen Kirschman. She's located in Northern California as well, I believe, in Berkeley or the East Bay. And the I Love a Cop book, I think she's also done one for I Love a Fireman. And she provides an insight. She's done interviews and talked to police-based families to provide an insight as to what could be expected when doing the job. So these are obviously books that, you know, we've taken and are adding to our toolbox, if you will, and we are using these as our stepping stone to provide something a little bit better. Our book is obviously going to be down the line. We encourage people to attend seminars, you know, like Street Survival, as far as officers are concerned, to kind of reset themselves to make sure that they are, you know, ready to do the job and take care of things and make sure that they are mentally prepared to do what's required on a day-to-day basis and not give the bad guys anything that's there. And we also want to make sure that, you know, that people really seek out other websites. You know, the National Police Wives Online is a really great resource for the spouses. There's other ones for police families that are available out there. You know, you search Google and police support groups, and you might even find one that's in your area. I would highly encourage that the counties or the cities, depending on how large you are, really start a peer support-based group. We are in contact, and Heidi could provide you with some of this information, with another agency that's in the Midwest that activated a protocol regarding helping the families out, and if we don't have that information readily available, we could get that to you to post on your website.
Okay.
But, you know, looking to find your resources is probably the best that you can do as far as getting your mindset wrapped around this concept. You know, unfortunately, you know, we don't have all the answers right now. We're working on doing as much data collection as we possibly can to provide a lot of these things available, not only through the website like, you know, the National Police Wives, but eventually when we create our book. I'm available if you wish to contact me. My email address is, and I'll spell it out, it's M as in Mary, and it's my last name, Mejia, M as in Mary, E, J as in John, I, A as in Adam, at TCPD, Tom Charles, Paul David, and it's the dash sign, not the underscore, but the dash sign, authority.org. Or you could go to the Twin Cities Police Department homepage for Twin Cities, California, and they will provide a link to our emails. Or you could contact me at 415-927-5150 is my work number.
Well, Michael definitely covered the books that I think are very valuable. I can't underscore enough how much Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement should be a must-read. One of the things we're looking at in his department is actually giving a copy to every new family. I really consider it to be that important, and I'm happy to actually spend my own money on those books. If there's not a budget for that, I'll come up with it myself. I think it's that important. I definitely would encourage any kind of police family support group. My experience is with the National Police Wives. Their website is policewivesonline, and that's all one word, .org. They are very welcoming. They have different levels of membership, whatever you're comfortable with. And it's, again, a very important place to find the company of your peers, people who understand the life you live and that can really converse with you on a level that is inherent with understanding. My email address is I'm more than welcome to have anyone contact me, and email's the best. My email is the letter C, and then Heidi, H-E-I-D-I, Hansen, H-A-N, like Nancy, S-E-N, at mac.com, and I will answer everyone as best as I'm able.
Thank you both very much. I appreciate you being so forthcoming and so generous with your time with me today, but also in all that you're doing. I think law enforcement families in general are very giving, but I think you've gone kind of above and beyond, and so I thank you for sharing your time and your thoughts, and also just so much good stuff that I think needs to, you know, spark some thoughts in other people's minds to get them going in the right, healthy direction.
Thank you very much.
We're honored to be asked. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for being our guests. I welcome you to stay in touch with Cops Alive, and if you would like to contribute anything in writing, we would always welcome that. Cops Alive is here for these exact same purposes to, you know, we say we're here to have cops help other cops. And I think that goes true for cops' families, helping other cops' families. We really do deserve to get to Ollie Ollie Oxen Free and then enjoy a good life in retirement. And so many officers do not do that. It's not just about surviving the bullets. It is about surviving the career. And we think that that means being happy, healthy, and successful in everything that you do. And we are always looking for ways to help people do that. We are all about resources. And I guarantee that we'll stay in touch with Michael and Heidi. And, you know, it is about collaborative effort to try to make, in the United States, we have over 1 million law enforcement officers. It's a collaborative effort to try to make sure that we all survive so that generations that come after us can do the very same thing. So, Heidi and Michael, thank you very much for your time, and I definitely will be in touch.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
It has been my pleasure. You've been listening to Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. Our guests have been so generous. I encourage you to stay in touch with our blog. We will write about them, we will follow them, and we will do everything we can to make sure that you can connect with them. This is John Marks saying stay safe and stay healthy, and thank you very much for listening.